When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Listening to Board Gamers Anonymous, episode 33. This week we're talking about Marvel Dice Masters, along with Brussels, Zombies, and Airlines Europe.
You're listening to a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, dedicated to bringing podcasters together for the greater good of gaming. It's sort of like Voltron, but with better lip syncing. Find out more at dicetowernetwork.com.
Welcome to Board Gamers Anonymous, a podcast about gamers and the insane fun we have at the table together. This is Anthony.
Hey, this is Chris.
This is Daniel.
And this is Drew.
All right, welcome to the episode, everybody. We have a bit of a special episode this week. Last time around, you knew Daniel was out of town in South Carolina. This week, he is still out of town, and Drew has joined him on the vacation train.
I am in the beautiful shore resort of Castine, Maine. It's beautiful here.
And we're not jealous at all, right? Yeah, we're going to be totally nice to Drew this whole episode.
to be fair, we spent every day on an island.
Oh, that's
island
true.
Living, right?
We even have a beach somewhere.
That's what people say.
Island on the Atlantic Ocean. Yeah.
Yep, it's beautiful-ish.
Forget about it.
So we're just going to dive right in, right off the bat. Drew, even though he's on vacation, is hard at work pulling together the news. Drew, what do you got?
Oh, well, interesting little news about Settlers of Catan on the internet. Why that's so interesting is because Microsoft got their hands involved in that. So they created a website. You can go and you can play Catan. Only it started out really buggy and glitchy, which for anyone who uses Microsoft products knows that's par for the course. So
it's version one. It doesn't count.
Yeah, that's it. It's beta. Version one is always beta. But it's fun to check it out. It's a way to try before you buy or play with friends across the country. And we'll post all the links to this in the show notes. Fantasy Flight is announcing another convention. The conventions are popping up everywhere. This is incredible. And now we're starting to see conventions based around one single game. Fantasy Flight is having their Cosmic Con in September up in Minnesota, Roseville, Minnesota. It's going to be pure wall-to-wall cosmic encounters. If you love big eight-player, out-of-control games, you know, whatever kind of cosmic encounters you want, it's going to be fun. All the new expansions. And let's see, Hasbro, our favorite international conglomerate, industry leader, they continue to churn out movies, but now they're getting hit with a lawsuit about their Candyland movie. Some people think it's a stupid idea, I guess, and they're suing them. No, that's not it. The makers of Candyland say that Hasbro doesn't have the right to make a Candyland movie. They can print Candyland and sell Candyland. They just can't make a movie about it. So a snag. And maybe it's a good idea we don't make so many movies about board games.
Or any.
What can you imagine Candyland? What kind of movie would that be?
Hold on. Well, Drew, hold on a second. Do we not have the masterpiece that is Clue?
That was like the only movie, and that ruined it because everyone else wants another Clue.
That was a great movie, yeah.
Yeah, it was the only one that really worked.
Yeah, I can't argue with Clue.
You can't. It's a great movie. I don't know. How many other board game movies are there?
Battleship.
Battleship was horrible.
Yeah, that just...
Why, after that, why would anybody try?
That's so bad. It's funny because video games seem to be getting closer and closer to hitting their stride. Like the World of Warcraft footage apparently looked really good.
Sure.
That could be an interesting movie. But board games are about to become the new video game movie.
Yeah.
Well, what's the Frank Miller movie that's coming out?
Sin City 2?
Yeah, that looks like a video game, basically. That has the video game feel to it. That's how good video games are getting.
Well, it's based on his graphic novels, which do have that kind of aesthetic. The very kind of, it's very visceral, it's very black and white, it's very, you know, scene for scene, you know, scene for scene shot as if it was, you know, screenshots or, you know, comic book pages.
Well, they're doing that movie like it's a pseudo animation style. It's
absolutely.
Yeah, where the two are blending together. So now movies are becoming like video games like movies.
Well, you did have the Katy Perry Candyland-esque type of video. So, I mean, that's about as close as it comes. You know, Hollywood is always looking for an IP that has recognition. They're not really too concerned with the quality of the movie once you pay your money and get in there. So that's what tends to happen. So if you look like 21 Jump Street or The Karate Kid, you know, it doesn't matter if the movie either lives up to the quality or matches the script. It just needs to be enough to get you in the theater.
Just enough.
Yeah, so Candyland is a classic child's game that everyone's played. I mean, it's brilliant for Hollywood to kind of, you know, connect with our nostalgia and get you to come in. Oh, Candyland, yeah, I remember playing as a kid. And you go in there, and you're like, oh my God, the horror. But up until that point, you've already paid your money and they're happy to have you. So
the only way I could see that work is as a Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs kind of movie. But they're gonna bring Johnny Depp in, I'm sure, and just...
Anything's possible. I guess it depends on the director you get for that.
Let's say Tim Burton and Johnny Depp could make Candyland work.
Tim Burton's Candyland.
Oh my God, I want to see it now.
So they already did that?
Man, I love that.
Called Charlie.
Yeah, that was it.
Basically, right?
Good call.
Oh, I thought it was Alice in Wonderland.
Or every other Tim Burton movie.
That's right.
I just wanted to hit a touch on this CosmicCon. What do you think of building an entire convention around one single game? Would you get tired of that?
Well, I think Cosmic Encounters is that one type of game that you could play for an entire weekend because of the vastness of the numbers of roles. And because it has so much negotiation that you could play straight up trying to win for yourself, trying to bring everybody together, or you can play with multiple races. And it's really one of those rare games that the races do play differently.
Yeah, I don't think it's a cool idea, especially it's not like they rented out a convention center somewhere. It's just in the Fantasy Flight headquarters, which is kind of cool by itself. Like, I want to go just for that.
Daniel, you played this, right?
No, I don't believe I've ever played Cosmic Encounters, actually. It's been on the list for a long time, but it keeps getting shoved aside for other things. But there are a lot of games that have conventions centered around them, right? Magic Gathering, Warhammer, every variation thereof.
Well, I know miniatures and RPGs, but what about just straight up cardboard tabletop games? What other games would you like to see? Would you be able to play a whole weekend of?
Well, there's always those epic kind of games like Twilight Imperium, Eclipse, Rune Wars, maybe even Caverna plays for a couple of hours. So, you know, there are those games where you do need just that amount of time to actually get one of those games done.
Yeah.
Okay. I got one more thing. So there's one other thing I just wanted to get in there because it's an app that I think is really, really valuable. I've always been looking for this. It's an app called Playtime for, I know it's on the Apple platform. I don't think it's for Android. It's the first multiplayer timer I've seen, as opposed to more than two people. All the timers out there are like chess timers. But this one, you can time a whole bunch of people at once. It's a free app, and it's for any group that has a player that's sucked in by analysis paralysis. I think it's a great way.
Daniel, you're not the only one in this group, man. You're good.
All right, I'm done. That's everything I got right now.
Awesome. All right, so that's all for the news. Drew had some connection issues, so he had to hop off. He might hop back on a little bit later to talk about some of the games he's been playing lately, but we're going to forge ahead with the trio that we still have halfway decent connections with, and we'll see what we can pull together with our questionable internet connections.
We lost one of our members, just like that horror movie. We must stay together. Daniel, get over here. Don't go alone. It's dangerous.
It's too late.
Oh, no.
I told Drew not to wear that red shirt. Doesn't listen. All right, so we're going to jump in. We're going to talk about acquisition disorders. This episode is coming out the weekend before Gen Con, so obviously there are plenty of things on our list that we'd like to see. So let's do that right next. Acquisition Disorder Corner. And before we jump into anything related to Gen Con, I have to say that I finally found a copy of Dice Masters at one of our friendly local gaming stores here in New York, the 20-sided store.
Woohoo!
Yeah. So we were there for our usual Thursday gaming nights. They have a board gaming night there every Thursday. There's a $5 raffle, and you can win store credit. And I won, and so I'm just looking around to see what I should buy, which is awesome, because if I had not won, I probably would not have looked around at all. Chris spotted the Dice Master starter kit on the shelf there. They had four copies. It was ridiculous.
It was one of those mirages. You're like, it looks like it. It can't possibly be it, because there's four of those. That doesn't exist in nature, at least not locally.
Yeah, it was. And I've been to Complete Strategist since. I've been to other stores. Nobody has it. They just happened to get a bunch in, and nobody bought them for whatever reason. But I did.
Yay!
So, thank you to those people who emailed me with links for various places I could buy them. I even got a message on Facebook from somebody who is pointing me to a Canadian website who would be launching a new batch, I think Friday morning at like 9 a.m. He's like, if you camp out and click at the exact right minute, you can order it before they go out of stock, which was pretty cool. I probably would have done that, actually, if it hadn't been for finding this the night before. But I finally have it. We've played it a couple times, played a little bit more, and then we're going to do our review. Otherwise, acquisition disorder-wise, the main thing that's been on my radar, at least in terms of what I've been playing lately, or spending money on lately, is Hearthstone's newest expansion. A single-player expansion, actually.
Yes.
Basically, they took the raid from the game, World of Warcraft, turned each of the bosses in there into an opponent, and then you run through each quarter, and or each wing, I guess, of the raid, and try to defeat them. It's not super hard unless you put it to heroic, and then it's unreasonably hard.
Yeah, this is the bug adventure.
Yeah.
So you get like Anubis, this big kind of beetle who attacks you, and then you have this Spiderella type of villain, and then you have a giant spider. So each of them has a unique power that kind of comes into play, and when they go into heroic mode, the power becomes even stronger and becomes even less of a cost and even incredibly more dangerous.
It's ridiculous. So the basic version, there's all like some quirk to it, and there's new cards, and a tremendous number of death rattles, which is kind of the theme here.
Yeah.
Which makes sense, considering where you are. So those versions, you might play three or four times, tweak your deck a little, and then you'll beat them. They're not super hard, the normal version. They're hard, but they're not super hard. The heroic version, they increase the health of all the bosses by 15, so they're all 45. And then they get ridiculous powers, like, I'm going to hit you for 5 every time for 1 mana.
Sure.
So you have to kill them fast. I have yet to beat one. So I beat all the normals.
Not really.
And I beat the class challenges to get the cards, to unlock the cards. And those are kind of fun, but they're crazy easy. Way too easy.
Yeah, I beat the first two on heroic. And, you know, there's a lot of pop-ups in the game which basically says, these bosses are tough. You have to kind of build a deck to beat them. So if you have a deck that's working for you in P versus P, that's probably not going to work for you here. You really have to take in consideration whatever their special power is and kind of counter that. So the second boss battle you're going to fight, her power is she gets to hit for damage based upon how many number of cards you have in your hand. So obviously what you want to do is get as many cards as possible out of your hand onto the table so that when she does hit you, she's not really hitting you for much of anything. And that way you kind of neutralize her power. That helped a great deal. One of the other bosses actually spawns a spider, and instead of it being a 3-1, three attack and one defense, it's a 4-4. That's really rough, and I just barely got through that through my skin and my teeth. I threw a lot of taunts out there. It was the only way I could kind of battle, like taunt the entire game and just outpower it. The last battle that I'm currently fighting against the spider, and it's not really going well, is for no cost, the spider can return two cards from the table back into your hand. So what I've been trying to do is use a deck full of charges. So I'll throw the characters out, they'll hit the villain, and then the spider will return them back to your hand at the beginning of their round. So you can kind of keep throwing these back out, but still, because of the mana cost, it's kind of hard to get a lot of damage out there.
That's a really tough one.
Yeah, it seems like what you might want to try there. I haven't had a chance to play this yet, and so it's on my list for something. It's not so much an acquisition, right, because it's still going to be free unless you get hooked in by the freemium in-game purchases. But it seems like you might want to try something like a low-cost cards that have effects when summoned.
Sure. The Battle Cry?
Yeah, Battle Cries. And there are a few other ones that have things. I don't think they're labeled that. Anyway, yeah. Essentially, use cards of Battle Cries, and then you'll have the ability to get that Battle Cry effect over and over and over again. So by returning that card to your hand, the spider is putting themselves in a bad situation.
Yeah. Like a Miracle Rogue might do well, too.
Oh, yeah.
Because you just, like, throw a charge out there, drop a couple combos on it, and hit for 15. And then they throw it back in your hand, you do it again.
Sure. But it takes a while before you can get that.
Cards, yeah.
And you also have to have the mana for that, too, because you're getting hit for 6-7 points every round.
You got to do it fast.
Yeah. It's got to be low-cost stuff.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a really good expansion. I was surprised. It's fun to have a single-player version, and especially because I was starting to get demolished in the PvP. Like, I just, when I first started playing, I was winning maybe half the games, and now it's like a quarter if I'm lucky, and it's demoralizing, and you don't want to play.
Sure.
And I don't have the money to go buy a bunch of new cards, so a single player anything, I'm like, well, at least I can do this and feel like I'm doing something. It's a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to the other wings opening up, even if they're gonna
charge
you for them.
The second wing opened up, they do charge.
Yeah,
I don't know if that gonna become free or point at some point.
I don't think so.
It's just gonna be straight charge.
Yeah, it's $20 for all four.
Ooh, boo.
Or $7 per wing.
That's not cool.
So
that's not cool at all.
Yeah, and you can pay with coins, but I think the total coin cost is like 3,000 or something.
Really?
So you best have been saving since it started, because otherwise you don't have the coins for that.
That's a bit of a challenge, to say the least. But as you said, Anthony, the challenge with this game, like any CCG, is there's always going to be somebody out there that's going to be able to outspend you financially and then put better cards in their deck. And then you might have a strategy, or you might have a good card combination, a really good meta, and then someone's throwing out cards and you just can't compete on any level. So it's great to see the single-player campaigns, but If they're going to be something you're going to have to pay for, but you'll get cards, eventually this game is going to be unplayable to anyone who doesn't put money into the game.
Yeah. All right. But those are the two that, I guess not Acquisition Disorder, because I already have them, but they're the ones on my radar this week. Daniel, any new finds down there?
I'm just waiting for the rule sets for D&D Next to start dropping. There's a fair amount of speculation, and it seems fair to speculate in this way, that the player's handbook for D&D 5 or D&D Next, whichever name you prefer, that will be dropping after Gen Con and probably be demoed there. And while they've released sort of a short version of the rules, they haven't released the full rule book yet, and I would like to have that flexibility, especially if we go forward with the plans that we've been talking about of playing a campaign together.
Yeah, absolutely. That'll be fun. Yeah, we did a little bit last week just setting up characters and just going through the basic PDF they give you is a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we'll talk about that on a later podcast about how to put those characters together, because that was actually a lot of fun.
Yeah, it looks to be a really good system, and I'm looking forward to giving it a whirl.
Yeah, awesome. Speaking of Gen Con, obviously that is coming up this week as you're listening to this. Lots of games that have been announced that are either going to be shown there or released there. We unfortunately will not be there, so
aww,
we just get to look from afar and hope that these games hit the actual stores sooner than later.
Sure.
But there's obviously a lot of cool stuff coming out. So, you know, just that's the bulk of our acquisition disorders right now. Anything that's like extra interesting to you, Chris?
Well, I know one of the games that people are really looking forward is Pandemic Contagion. So many times when you play the traditional original Pandemic, you are playing these researchers and scientists trying to wipe out these diseases. Well, with Contagion, you actually flip that and you actually get to be the diseases trying to wipe out humanity. So,
yay, black humor.
Okay. So there's that, which is a little destructive, but I know some people have been talking about that for quite some time and wanted to get something like that out. And so it's actually happening.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's been a joke at most gaming tables for years.
So. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the viruses were doing fine on their own.
Yeah, they don't need help.
It's kind of odd. It's like, hey, you know what? You get to play the other side because you feel so bad for them.
Yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff coming out that I'm interested in. Imperial Settlers, I've heard a lot about in the last couple months.
That looks great.
Yeah, so that'll be a lot of fun. I definitely want to check that out when it's hits the store shelves, I guess. Then there's the trio of games that should be there from Plaid Hat. The new Summoner Wars Master Set, Dead of Winter. And yeah, it's another zombie game, and I'm really not excited about it. But I am excited to see how this Crossroads system plays, because they're going to be skinning other games with it. That's the part I want to see.
Sure.
The zombies, no interest whatsoever. But the game system, it's new. I want to see how it goes.
And the new Mice and Mystics experience?
Yes. Yeah, that'll be fun. I don't know if that'll be out, if they'll be selling any at Gen Con. I don't think they've confirmed one way or the other. I know it won't be available for me to buy until the fall sometime. So here's hoping soon. But that'll be a fun one. Antoine Bowser's new game, Samurai Spirit, that should be out.
Really looking forward to that, too.
He's already said that that'll be there for people to buy. The yearly Days of Wonder release, Five Tribes. The new Ted Alspott game, Castles of Mad King Ludwig.
Heard about that.
That should be fun. There's a bunch of games out there, but that's just a few that I'm keeping my eye on. Hopefully they'll release soon. And then who knows what Fantasy Flight will do. It's always a secret. Hopefully Battle Lore expansion.
That would be great.
Yeah.
And obviously King of New York.
Yes. Yes. And I have not... Some people seem a little skeptical about this game, but we live in New York, so the fact that there are actual Staten Island locations in this game means I have to buy it. I don't care if it's literally a reskin of King Tokyo.
It's a fun game. You got to check that out. There's also Subdivision by Bezier Games. So if you love Suburbia, this is kind of a different take on it, but looks to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. It's a new designer, right?
Yes.
Right, yeah, so there's plenty of, you know, awesome new games coming up. Gen Con this coming week. On our next episode, we'll be talking about any new announcements that came out, anything that was surprising, what was hot, what was not, from our perch far, far away. And if you're there and you happen to see any of these games or get to play them, you know, hop on the forums and let us know how it played, because I'm super eager to see these games and to play them. All I can do is live vicariously through you. So.
Yes. Especially all the promos that come out at Gen Con is pretty amazing. You don't really see those anywhere else in the world.
Yes, if you want to send them our way,
that would be awesome.
Yeah.
I know some people are a little bummed about that too. Star Trek Attack Wing actually has a number of promo cards coming out. Last year there was what they literally called Gen Con, because it was the con, and this year they're coming out with, I believe it's 6 cards that are related to the Deep Space Nine universe, but they're only being released at Gen Con. So people are pretty bummed out about that, especially since there's actually going to be a decent Captain Sisko card, which everyone was asking for, but very few of us are going to get. So if you get one, congratulations, and let us know how it plays. And we'll be sad all the time. But that's okay.
And if I have to play against you, I'll probably lose. Then I'll be mad all the time.
And that's okay, too.
We're not bitter, guys. We're not bitter at all. Next year, Gen Con.
Oh, next year, absolutely.
Daniel, anything else? Anything Gen Con-wise? Any of those games, you know, got on your radar?
All of them.
All of them. Good. You belong on this podcast.
That was the correct answer. You have passed.
I have passed.
You may keep your seat.
I've chosen wisely.
All right. So that's Acquisition Disorders. It's the annual We Want Everything episode.
Yeah, Gen Con is the acquisition disorder.
Pretty much. So next episode, we'll narrow that down a little bit to the stuff that actually played well and that people are talking about, and maybe pick out a few that we would really like to see out of there. Next up, some of the games we've been playing lately. At the table this week. All right, so this last couple weeks, we got a few interesting games to the table. I know, Daniel, you talked last time about some games you'd picked up, including Zombies with not one, not two, but how many?
3 exclamation points, which Terry Pratchett assures me is a sure sign of someone who wears their underpants on their head. But Zombies with 3 exclamation points is a game put out by Todd and Carrie Breitenstein, produced by Twilight Creations, that seats about 2 to 6 players. And it's a sort of standard feeling zombie survival game with a twist in that it's a randomized tile base. So new tiles keep hitting the floor. Sometimes they have items. Other times you'll have an item in your hand that you can't use or can't actually have until you go to a store, but it just gives you the ability to procure that item if you go to a specific location. The game has a fair amount of sort of screw you mechanics, because each of you is trying to be essentially the lone survivor to the zombie apocalypse, and you can win by either killing 25 zombies or being the first person to the central space in the helicopter pad. If you do either of those things, you win. It's a pretty decent game. It's rated a little bit lower on BoardGameGeek than I usually like to go, floating around a 6. I tend to get nervous around that point. But it's actually pretty fun. We had some very dramatic moments. It's one of those games that can turn around on you in a single roll of the dice, and that happened to us while I was playing. I was at 24 zombies and 1 space away from the central space and taking that step. So if I had made the proper roll, I would have ended up winning by both standards at the same time. And of course, I did not make the proper roll, so I died horribly and brutally, which set me back, and then one of the other players was able to go ahead. It's a couple of issues with it. One is I am tired of the zombies theme, but I can't really complain about a zombies theme in a game that is named Zombies and did not try to hide it from me in any way. The other is that when you set up the tiles, you randomize them, you shuffle them, but you make sure that the helicopter pad is on the bottom. And what that made the gameplay like to me is I was just sort of waiting for the first half of the game. I was just sort of running little circles, waiting for the helicopter pad to come up. And I think it would be more fun if you use the variant rules that suggest for quicker play, which is you just shuffle it all around together so you have no idea when the helicopter pad's going to hit the ground. But overall, it's a decent game. I picked it up on sale for, I think, $10, and it was definitely worth $10. I don't know if I would buy it at full price. But, yeah, it was surprisingly fun for a game that is not as well-reviewed as other games I like to play.
Okay, not bad. That's a little older, right?
Yeah, it's 2001.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's going back. I know there's, a dozen different Zombies expansions for this thing?
Yeah, I'm going to have to give a shot and see what those are like. Maybe they'll add some more dynamicism to a game that I felt got a little stale. Oh, this is second edition, so that's 2010.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So it's back from the dead, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
See what you did there.
Yeah, see what I did there? Nice.
It's the reboot. Awesome, man. Does it play like anything else that was more recent?
Well, so if you have the... So it's got a tile laying mechanic, which you'll recognize from things like Betrayal in the House on the Hill. It does have these sort of like you find items as you go around, though that works a little differently. You draw cards from the deck, and some of the items will say things like, if you go to the sporting goods store, then you can use, I think that's the rifle or the shotgun. So essentially, you know where to find it. And then you get other cards, which are things like events where you can cause bad things to happen to other players or good things to happen to you. And so I guess that would be the closest mirror for me would be Betrayal, but with a big asterisk there. because the basic mechanic is different, right? There's zero cooperation as opposed to Betrayal, where it's mostly cooperative until that one fateful moment. And it ends up feeling a lot less dynamic than Betrayal does to me, but that's a hard comparison because Betrayal is one of my favorite games.
Yeah, that is a tough one.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I mean, I could see like when Betrayal was out of print, maybe it's a decent filler for that, but now that you can actually find Betrayal again, if that's what you're looking for, why would you not pick that?
Exactly.
Cool. All right, man. I mean, I'm not going to say I want to play it just because it's zombies, but if you brought it out, I'd give it a shot.
Yeah. It's worth giving a playthrough.
Yeah. About how long does it take?
About an hour. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, for $10, sounds like a good deal to me.
Yeah.
All right. So we played a couple other games, too. One that we got out to the table just this last week is Airlines Europe. This is an Alan Moon game. It's published by Rio Grande Games, and it's, I guess, 2-3 years old, 2011. So it won a bunch of awards, a lot of nominations back then, and the game itself is kind of an interesting hybrid for a few different mechanics. So there's kind of this stock element. You're purchasing stocks. You're laying routes down, but the goal is not necessarily to complete the routes. It's more to drive up the value of each particular airline's stock, and then to make sure you have enough of that stock to score the points when they come up. So each airline basically has one marker on the board, and however far up that goes determines how many points people get when the scoring occurs. And then it'll go down based on who has the most of that stock, second most, third most, fourth most, etc. So yes, getting the most of a stock is good, but you still get points if you have second or third most. So diversification is good, but over-diversification might water it down to the point where you don't have the majority of anything. You had to build enough of a strategy that it was fun, but it was a little lighter than, you know, a lot of other type of strategy games like this. And despite how it looks, you're not creating routes necessarily. It's more about the stocks and spending wisely. So I thought it was a lot of fun.
It's an interesting game because when the whole board mechanic with placing the airplanes to make these routes really is secondary to the stocks that you play at certain times. So the deck of cards, like Alhambra, you know, there's certain scoring cards in the deck. So what you want to do is be able to have the stocks out there in front of you that you play these stocks depending on where the planes are on the board. So if there's a lot of red out there, you want to make sure that you have the majority of red so that you'll score the majority of points for that round. So initially you're like, plane, 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 because I play Ticket to Ride. That's what we do, right? Plane, plane, plane. And then you're like, no, that's not it at all. I'm raising the value of all these different airline routes, but it's not really helping me in the game. I just have to strategically place my stocks when I think that scoring card's going to come out, which is random, so I can't be completely sure, but you're basically trying to compete with players to have the most number of stocks in that airline that's scoring a lot. So if you see red going up, you're going to play a lot of red, but then at the same time, other players could play other colors and even block that route and lower that value. So it was interesting that when we played the game, I think it was white and gray, which have very few stocks, scored very quickly, and then by the end of the game, everything kind of catched up, if not surpassed it. I think with the exception of purple was at the end.
Poor purple.
Yeah, poor purple. So as the game goes on, you're like, I want to have a lot of these because it's scoring a lot, but at the same time, you might want to pick up the other ones because they'll score something, and throughout the game, they might score more. So it has a Ticket to Ride element. It has an Alhambra element to it. And in all, it's a very good game. It seems highly complex, and it's not. It's very, very simple. The iconography is decent. The plane models is very nice. The board looks pretty once it's kind of all filled in with the planes. And you just need somebody to keep track of where everything is and on the scoring board. But beyond that, it's a fine game, and I would definitely give it a play.
Yeah, I'm going to go with that, too. I think it's a fun game. I think it's out of print, so I don't even think you can buy it. Otherwise,
yeah.
I mean, I might give it a borderline buy because it was unique. It doesn't play like anything else I have. You mentioned Alhambra.
Yeah.
It does play a little like that, but not enough so that I would say it's a replacement or couldn't be.
That's a good question. Does it replace it? I mean, because you're picking tiles in Humbra, you're picking tiles of a certain color, and if you have the most of that color, you'll score the most points, and then there's second and third place. So it does fit, and it does have that multiple random scoring mechanic in the deck, so it fits like that. So it does have two of the three elements. You know, the planes in the middle set up a variable value as far as what the colors are going to be valued, whereas a Humbra, it's kind of already set.
Yeah, exactly. So it's very dynamic in that way.
Sure.
Also, a lot of hidden information, because you could be building up a hand with like six blue cards and drop them all at once, whereas in Alhambra, you put the tiles down as you buy them.
Everybody knows, yeah. I think Alhambra is a better gateway game because all the information is out front, where this is a little more hidden. Not too much, but a little bit more hidden.
Yeah, definitely.
And the board itself can scare off a lot of, you know, new players, because it does look, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing here. At least the first round or two.
Yeah, yeah. But despite that, it was a quick learn.
No, absolutely.
We picked it up fast.
Yeah.
So that was a fun one. I enjoyed playing it. I would play it again.
Yeah, I didn't think I was going to like it initially, just from the looks of it. It looked a little bland and dry. And then once we kind of got into it, probably about the fourth or fifth round, I was really into it. There really isn't too many strategic decisions to make unless you really want to go out of your way to block somebody. But otherwise, it's a great game. I would recommend it.
It definitely sounds interesting. I mean, I'm a big fan of the Alhambra style scoring system where it's randomized and comes up unpredictably because that keeps you on your toes in a kind of game that otherwise becomes very mechanical.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it works well with a lot of people. Like, Alhambra, you could probably play with two people and it's still kind of fun to play 2-3. I think this game would play pretty weak with a fewer number of people, because you don't have quite the same... It seemed like there was alternate options for fewer players, but it didn't seem like it would play as well.
Sure. And like you're saying, like, if you... Without the variable scoring mechanic, you could hold a deck of blue cards. But because you don't never know when that's going to come out, you might be doing yourself some damage by not playing those early. So it really kind of...
Which happened to me twice.
Yes. So. Especially at the end of the game.
Yeah. Yeah, I got hit on two out of the three scoring cards, yes, by having like a handful of stuff. I'm like, I almost got this down.
But it was the scoring was relatively close at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I was in last place, but everybody else was pretty close.
I think I was second by like 1 point.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a new player. I was new. You were new. The player who won was new. And we picked up it all really quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Kind of disappointed to see that it's not in print, actually, because it's relatively recent. It's a big-name designer, and the game was good. All right, so the one other game we got to the table is Brussels 1893. So this game, I guess, is a worker placement. I mean, not a guess. It is. It's just a bit of a hybrid in terms of how it works. It's a variable board layout in terms of the placement. Variable spaces, because you move which spaces are available each turn, and then how you interact with that board too. You can start locking things down and getting secondary benefits.
It's your standard victory point game. It's a Euro game. It's all about engaging yourself in the world of art in that time period. So one section of the board has all of the actions that you'll be taking, and it kind of in a way mimics like a gallery. Like there would be these paintings kind of set up. And what's really interesting about the game, which we all really loved, was when you got to be first player, you got to choose where this frame was placed on this part of the board, which kind of limited which actions you could take. Now, in addition to that, there was also a whole other strip of actions you could take throughout the game, which if you took it the first time, it was one worker. If you took it with, there was already two workers on there, it would cost you two workers. So it had a lot of possibilities because it had a lot of tracks to it. So you also had this Mancala kind of clock that actually moved around and told you what the cost to build was. So sometimes it was different cubes and sometimes the arms moved and it was other costs. So there was a bit of a challenge there. In addition, you would be picking up works of art, which later in the game you would score or sell. And based upon where the market was at that point, which is another part of the board, this is a little weird kind of square that had these colors on it that moved around based upon the player choosing to pick a certain direction for it. and your artwork would be worth a lot or a little. So you had building buildings, buying art, selling art, picking different actions. It really has a lot of different mechanics that kind of come together. I don't know if they come together well, because it's a game that's really trying to be about theme, and it really is not. And this game might have even played better if it didn't have any theme at all to it, because it seemed like they were trying to be too smart for their own good. Like, there was a lot of interesting things about it, but the problem was there was a lot of interesting things about it. It was just too many different things. You had to manage a lot of different aspects of it. And forgive this expression, this is a fiddly game, my friend.
Yes.
This game is fiddles all the way through. This game should have been born with a fiddle with it, because you play it and you're like, I'm going to move this guy here, and then that allows me to get this building, and I have my own personal board, and I have to make some corrections there, and then I got to move the hands on the clock there, and I got to move the other piece to tell me where I'm going to sell something, and it's just...
Nothing ties together. It's just all these disparate elements, and any one element, you look at it, and you're like, well, that's kind of clever. You put them all together, and you're like, it's just a big box of clever stuff.
It is.
And then the one big thing, too, and this actually, I did not enjoy this at all. I had a very poor experience, and I won the game, so that's not a good sign. The buildings themselves, when you build, and then you run yourself up the architecture track, that's like 70% of the points you're going to score in the game, if you do it right. Like, I scored 60-some-odd points. What's it? No, it's 40 points.
With the buildings.
And on the end scoring.
The end scoring, which is also fiddly.
Which is also fiddly. And that was half of my score. Like, you can't have something that's that disparate, like, just forces it that far off the end of the scale. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, the end scoring, you really have to keep your eye on so many different things, and sometimes they work together in concert, sometimes they don't. And as far as managing other people, see where they're at, it's a bit challenging, because there needed to be a little bit more time put into kind of thematically putting everything together. And, you know, I love Euro games and are a big fan of Euro games, but the idea of theme isn't just the fact that it has pretty pictures or it has an interesting story behind it. It's about sitting down and playing a game, and it makes sense what you need to do next without having to look at the rule book. It just thematically follows that I would do, if I did X, Y would follow, and then Z would follow. So the best thematic games are not necessarily the prettiest, but they're the ones that logically follow through, and you feel like you're taking through a game and not have to stop and think every 5 seconds, like, how does this mechanic work?
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a challenge here, and it's a sad thing because there's so many good parts to this.
Yeah, yeah, you want to like it. I mean, I didn't really, but everybody else at the table wanted to like it. So, I mean, Daniel, I could ask you what you think if you'd want to play it, but A, it's a worker placement, and B, two guys who like worker placements are telling you it's bad, so...
And the theme is not there, so...
Yeah, I mean, the phrase, a big box of clever stuff, sounded like an endorsement almost for a second, but then, you know... If everything is well designed independently, but with no attention paid to going together, that seems to be what I'm getting from you guys anyway. That makes me nervous, and this is not my type of game in general, so I probably will never play it. Especially since the people I'd most likely play it with are you guys, and if you guys don't like it, there's a fair chance it won't hit the table again.
Good call. Yeah, I'm not playing this again either. I said this a couple times while we were playing it. It seemed like they built this game, and then they playtested it, and like, oh, we got to tweak this. And they playtested it again, oh, we got to tweak this. And like 200 iterations later, you have this Frankenstein's monster that's been tweaked to such a level that the game just... There's just stuff happening, and it doesn't actually flow together anymore. And maybe it did in the original draft, and it was just unbalanced, but...
I mean, this happens a little bit when you want to have... And ideally, you do want to have this. You want to have multiple ways to win a game. You shouldn't all have to follow the same strategy to win the game. We talked about this a little bit in Russian Railroads, where it's a little bit, you know, locked in. A little bit. This game has a lot of different positive score points. Like, early on, I had one of these people that would score me 5 victory points every time I played it, which was great. But that was probably a good chunk of my victory points, and it really shouldn't, a game at least at this complexity, you shouldn't score that many points by just placing a worker on one spot. It should have some thoughtful mechanic, snowball effect where you're doing a number of different things or some tactics or strategy involved instead of, I place my guy here, 5 points. Every round, I place my guy here, 5 points. I mean, that was scoring me so many points, and it was really unnecessary.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. This game came out at the exact same time as Russian Railroads. I think they released the same day.
And that's why this game disappeared completely off the radar.
Yeah, I'm not going to say it's a horrible game. It's not a horrible game. It has a lot of good intentions, has some cool ideas. It's just this type of game, what it offers, there are other games that offer it much better and that are much more tightly refined. Like, we reviewed Russian Railroads in the last episode. Go buy that. That's a good worker placement game.
Sure. And it has a lot of the same mechanics. So this game is almost there, but just doesn't make it. So it's going to be a dodge for me.
Yeah, me too.
Well, if you guys are dodging it, I will probably end up dodging it if only by association.
Yeah. One of us. Oh, man.
And now for the feature review.
All right, now for the feature review time. We talked about this a little bit earlier in the episode. It's Marvel Dice Masters. Finally got my copy in. Finally got enough cards and dice that we can put together a couple decks, run through some basic meta. And Chris and I played it a few times, so we're going to talk about it. And just general impressions overall. All right, so in terms of how the game plays, it's relatively simple. It's, if you've played Quarriors, almost all these mechanics are going to seem familiar, but obviously it's been reskinned in a way that makes it, you know, head-to-head competitive. Quarriors doesn't really play like that. It's, you know, it's designed as a board game versus a head-to-head combat game. So the basic idea of the game is that you're going to have your own team of superheroes, and your opponent will have theirs. You assign dice based on how many cards you pulled out. So I think the basic two-player variant is 6 cards and up to 15 dice, and then tournament rules is 8 cards and up to 20 dice. If all you have is a starter deck, which much fewer people have than the rest of the cards, then out of the box you're going to have far fewer cards than that. It doesn't come with enough to field like a full team of characters. So it really is just a starter set. It's enough to learn how to play the game, and it's not even enough to put a full set of characters out. So you're definitely going to need some expansions if you want to play the full game, as we're going to talk about it. But you can play out of the box, $15. That'll get you enough to cover, you know, some basics. In terms of the game itself, again, very similar to Quarriors. You put all your dice in a bag. You start the game by drawing 4. You roll those dice. They have energy on them. You use that energy to buy new dice. There are different types of energy that will match up to the different symbols on your character cards. Then there are also basic action cards that don't require any specific type of energy that you can buy anytime in the game when you have the energy for it. As you buy new dice, they go into your used pile. Then you're going to re-roll those on your next time you put them all back in your bag. At any time, if you pay the fielding cost for a character die or a sidekick, you'll move that up to the field zone. And then from there, you can either attack or defend. So you can leave your dice in the field zone as long as you want, if you want to keep them out there defensively, or you can push them up to attack. If you attack and someone defends you, then you just resolve damage, see who wins. If you attack and nobody defends you, you deal your damage to the opposing player, and then that die is going to go to your used pile. So it's basically, you've used them up, they're exhausted, however you want to think about it, but you can't just keep hitting them with the same die over and over again. So there's a benefit to defending, there's a benefit to not defending. It all depends on how you're playing. And then there are a ton of special abilities on each of these dice. Things that will help deal extra damage, things that'll block certain kinds of damage, things that will make it so people don't want to hit one of your dice in particular, things that make certain dice more powerful. there's like 130 some odd cards in this set, the first one, so I'm not going to run through all of them. But there's some interesting ones in there, some of them more thematic than others, that change how you play, that really force you to think about the meta and how it's going to interact with your opponent. And that's basically it. That's the core mechanics of the game. But like any game like this, any kind of collectible card game, where you have all these different special abilities and a limited number of cards you can buy, there's the major aspect. It's the deck building. Like, what are you going to put together, and what impact is it going to have on the other dice that you pull? So, like, we played a couple different types of metas. I played the more common Beast 666 one, where everything's very defensive. I put a lot of dice out. I was fielding a lot of dice, and a lot of them are going back to my prep area. If you die in combat, your dice go to the prep area, which just means you roll extra dice on your next turn. So if you're putting out a ton of dice and they're all getting hit, whether you hurt the other opponent or not, then the next turn you're going to roll way more dice than the four. Whereas Chris, you played just a...
Yeah, I had the Nick Fury Avengers kind of team up. So every time I was able to get Nick Fury out to the field, he allowed me to bring out an Avenger that I was able to roll for no cost. So that was an opportunity to field a lot of characters very quickly, depending on what my setup was. I had a number of Avengers characters kind of waiting there, plus some additional ones, which, because of Nick Fury's ability, weren't as helpful, you know, only if the cost kind of made sense. But Nick Fury allowed me to bring a lot of guys out there, as long as I kept them in the field.
Yeah, yeah. And it was definitely a very... contained strategy. You had like three dice, types of dice you bought, and that was it. And you're just sure. rolling through Iron Man to heal, Hulk yeah. to smash, Fury to recruit.
Yeah, because with especially that Iron Man and Hulk, they were high cost characters. Having Fury out allowed me to bring them out without paying that exorbitant cost, because each turn I was only really rolling four dice and maybe two additional ones with my special ability.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, your deck was more of a slow build.
Sure.
Like, I hit you... I got you down to, like, seven in the first three or four turns. But then you got... You finally got your Iron Man and your Hulk sure. out, and I couldn't get through anymore.
Yeah, Hulk was a really good blocker. Iron Man was something I picked up a little bit later. It should have probably been something I picked up earlier, because whenever he gets hit, he's able to heal your character for one health, or if you have him on the special with the star, he can heal for two, which is great. Hulk, on the other hand, if I take damage as the player or Hulk takes damage, he's able to knock out one of the opponent's characters, at least a level one, for free. Or if you get him on his star, he can knock out any character, which is another great ability.
Yeah, and it hurt a lot.
Well, Hulk smash, you know, that's...
Hulk does smash.
Hulk does what Hulk does, you know?
Yeah, it's stupid Hulk. and you still had to be able to buy those. They were expensive. They're like six apiece.
Yeah.
So you had to build up dice with your basic action so that you had extra dice to roll.
And I had to keep Fury in the field and not in the attack zone, because if you let him pass and if I did damage against you, there's no saying that I would be able to get him out there again.
Yeah.
So, but he was also very low cost. So it kind of balanced out in a way too.
Yeah. Yeah, it did a lot. And you mentioned afterwards I probably should have aimed at him, not everybody else.
Yeah, because he would have taken out the engine.
Yeah. But it was very interesting to see how each different type of deck played, because mine was very front-loaded. I bought the three Beast dice immediately, sure. so that I was constantly recycling into my prep area. And then I picked up the Angel die, Avenging Angel, and I should have picked up more of those, because those were... It either hit you, or if it you couldn't block it fully, it hit you anyway.
Sure. So you would have chosen the Angel over the Beast? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, your deck had a lot of defense to it, and it was kind of frustrating because it was like, I either have to take damage here, which is going to kill me, you know, or, you know, allow you to hit me anyway. So it was kind of, you know, so even Beast was giving you additional dice. You know, Angel was scoring hits, so it was kind of like it was a no-win kind of decision on that.
Yeah, yeah, and it worked really well for the first half of the game until you got your big hitters out. Like, yeah. It's the kind of, if I was revising that and playing it competitively, I'd have to do it even faster. Like, find a way to hit even faster to make sure you don't have a chance to get those cards out. And then my favorite card your least was Storm.
Oh, Storm is, yeah, which I noticed the first time we played, I had Storm, and she is so low cost, but to be able to reroll the die that the, you know, the attacker has is incredible.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. So once I realized that, because I couldn't get rid of any of your characters because they were all like 8 defense or 7 defense, Iron Man and then 2 Hulks. Like, I couldn't kill those because all mine were pretty low. So Storm would make you reroll them.
Sure.
And the one time you rerolled the star, and I'm like, damn it.
But I think two or three other times I rerolled just points and stuff like that, so it wasn't really that helpful. But
yeah, there's a 50% chance it'll hurt you.
So. Yeah. Well, even, I mean, like you said, I guess you get to choose, too. So if it's really a high-level one, then you want to re-roll it. But if it's a low-level one, you don't think if you think you can beat it, then why bother?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we could go down the rabbit hole of talking about, like, what each card does for hours. And
we're anybody, not?
Yeah, right. Anybody out there who doesn't have the game yet, that would be immensely frustrating. And sure. I know that because I was in your shoes for so long. Just wanted to give you kind of an idea of what's involved. You know, you look at the game out of the box, especially if all you get is a starter box, and you're like, well, this game is incredibly underwhelming.
Sure.
The first couple times we played with just those starter cards, it was kind of disappointing because nothing really happens. You can't really build a deck, you can't really build a meta, and it's
sure
just based on learning the rules, basically.
And let's talk, I mean, for those people who don't know, talk a little bit about like what you mean by meta.
Yeah, so like we talk about meta, it really applies to any game like this, where you have different abilities and anybody can kind of pick whatever they want for their own deck. So you're building three things in mind. A, how can you be as efficient as possible? In this case, getting extra dice and then dealing damage efficiently. B, how can you counter what you think your opponent's going to do? So like, what do other people frequently do? Building dice and hitting damage, and then how can you counteract that? For example, I had Storm Dice would counteract an Avengers deck. And see, how do you kind of keep it rolling? How do you build up a combo that's going to hit? You know, a lot of these types of metas where you're building out this strategy based on what other people's strategies are, in the end, it ends up being like you find a way to chain it all together and hit really hard all at once.
And you pretty much play the whole game for that one opportunity to do that massive combo where everything kind of works out really well, especially with this game, to be able to roll it.
Yeah. Yeah, there's enough luck in this game that you're rolling dice.
Sure.
So you could do everything perfectly. You could pick the right cards. You're only going to have 8 cards. It's not like deck building's that tough, and you're not drawing them. They're there the whole game.
Sure. That's in comparison to a lot of the miniatures games like Star Trek Attack Wing or X-Wing Miniatures and many others where you're building your crew, you're building your team, you're building your ships, so that if they line up right, which isn't that hard in those types of games, they're going to produce an effect that is far beyond what the individual cards could do.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a really big fun part. If you've never gotten involved in like these metas, you're kind of missing out a little bit. Now, usually when we talk meta, usually on some level, it's a, you know, a CCG is involved. It's a collectible card game on some level because there needs to be a massive amount of cards with different abilities in order to have effective combinations to play in the game and different combinations to play in the game. And we also talk about sometimes where there are winning combinations which are kind of broke. Like if you put certain cards together, it just, you can't possibly lose, at least if it comes out, you know. And even Hearthstone is like this too, which we talked about. So it's a lot of fun to take a look at this huge deck. You just lay out the cards on the table and be like, if I play this and I do with this one and this one connects with that one, this one gives me an extra ability. It's a lot of fun to be able to pull together this grand strategy and then play a game and see that strategy play out and just be incredibly effective. And or, as you were mentioning before, being able to think of what someone else's strategy is going to be and have some counter cards in there.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, you know, I'll admit it, sometimes it's a little overwhelming to think of.
Sure it is.
Like, any of these games like this, usually like the first month or two playing, I'm like, it's too much. And then I'll get dragged in. In this case, there's only 130 cards out. You're going to pick 8 of those. Like, the combinations there are not so extensive that it's going to be mind-numbing. But I have to say yet, because this is WizKids, so all their decks are going to, all the new sets coming out are going to be interchangeable. And there are already like two or three more announced.
Yeah, so we have DC, Dungeons and Dragons, Yu-Gi-Oh?
Yeah, yeah, and then the X-Men starter too.
Yeah, X-Men starter is going to be the one coming out, which is actually in pre-order at this moment.
Yeah, I think they're saying September, we'll see. Because yeah. This one was...
Yeah.
I got this 3 weeks ago, and it came out in April.
So. Sure. So expect delays, but if you go to Board Game Geek and you look up Marvel Dice Masters and you go to the forums, you're going to find almost endless threads about different metas. So if it's not really your thing, or you want to kind of pick up what a good meta is to kind of get started, that's really a good opportunity to kind of get some kind of general community wisdom on how to play the cards together.
We could talk about meta all day, but the game itself, we'll talk about the game itself because that's what you're listening for. Is it worth tracking down? Because if it's still on your want list, you probably still haven't played it. So it's, is it worth it? Is it worth, checking your local game store every week and harassing them to put your name on the list? The game itself, like we said, it's very straightforward. The rules are easy to pick up, like most CCGs, honestly, you know. You can get buried in Magic the Gathering and all the different meta options, but the game is very simple. This is also very simple. Game itself can play as quickly as 10 or 15 minutes, or if you're playing a deck like I was yesterday, it can take upwards of an hour, whereas I chip away and drag things out forever. So it can be pretty long or it can be pretty short. I can't imagine ever going over an hour, just because if somebody gets off one combo, that's 70% of the other person's life. And the actual game itself, it is all dice-based. The cards, while they have different abilities, all have the same artwork for every character. So there's not a lot of difference. You're not going to see different types of cards other than the abilities. You're not going to see different dice. They're the same dice for every character. You really end up, while it is somewhat thematic in terms of the basic mechanics, the actual physical pieces you're looking at are not as thematic.
I understand the dice having to be standard, right? Because you could field a number of different die in a game, so they have to be standard. But the cards, especially the rares and the ultra rares and stuff like that, they should have been different. They should have had a little foil to them. They should have been at least even a different picture, you know, because the game, especially if you don't have the mat, and you have the mat, Anthony, which is really nice because it really kind of gives a little bit more theme to the game. But if you don't have that, it's just these really tiny little dice that are not good quality. I mean, we should talk about that too. Unfortunately, like, I love WizKids for so much of what they do, but production quality is not one of the things. And I think half the game I kept asking you, that die, those dies, what does it say? What is that number? Because it's all blurred up and it's a tiny little number and the dice themselves are not really good quality at all. And it's just like, it's really disappointing because, you know, it loses theme points for me when something's blurred and really all of the components of this game is really dice. So if the dice are in good quality and you're keeping your eye on the dice for the entire game, there really isn't a board for this game. So you're looking at these little tiny cubes and you can't make them out and you're like, all right, you know, let's talk about the other component, which is in a game of two components, the cards. The cards are poor quality. They're thin. If you're going to obviously play this in any type of competitive form, you're probably going to sleeve the cards. I think you would almost have to. I think there are some games that we've played where you're like, these cards will be worth money, therefore I need to sleeve it. And obviously, because of some of the rares in this game, you'd want to sleeve it because at least right now they're worth a lot of money. But beyond that, you're going to sleeve these cards probably because they're very, very thin paper, and because of which they bend really badly. And we should also mention the booster packs. Now, the booster packs, and I love the idea that the boosters are a dollar. This is great. It's a great job by WizKids. But they take these two cards and shove in two dice. So now you have two dice bending and warping these two cards. So long before you open the pack, these cards are bent. I don't know if anyone has ever gotten two cards that were decent out of this, but it's like, it's very disappointing to open a game, whatever the price point is, and have slightly damaged components.
Yeah, and you have to flatten them. And I flattened The first 10 I got back in April, I flattened those out, and they did flatten eventually. They were sitting under, I think, Terra Mystica for like a month. That flattened them out. The ones I bought last month are still not flat, and I had those being flattened for maybe a week or two before I pulled them out to look through them. I don't know how long you need to leave these things sitting under a lead weight, but they're so bent. And you put them in a sleeve, it'll probably flatten them out a little more. But like, honestly, I don't... There's no way people care about the actual quality of a component when assigning value, because they're all crappy. Nobody has a decent quality card unless they got an uncut sheet.
Yes.
So, I don't know. It's frustrating. They're cheap, so it's not as bad. But let's say you bought a booster box, you spend $60, everything's bent. That would be frustrating to me. And I have spent a decent amount of money on the game, because the starter's 15, I bought 20 or so boosters, the mat was 15, so that starts to add up. That's, you know, $50 right there.
Do you feel that, let me put it this way, would you spend more if the cards were a better quality cardstock and the dice weren't bending it, if somehow they found a way to package it so there wouldn't be damage? Would you pay double? Would you pay $2 for a pack?
No. No, you're still not getting enough. $1 is a fair price, but you still don't want it to be destroyed.
Yeah.
You're only getting two dice and two cards out of the pack.
Sure. And one of the downsides of Dice Masters has to be the fact that because you can't find the starter sets, or because the starter sets are in such short supply, and now add to that the boosters are in short supply, you can't play this game very many places. I mean, this is a tournament game. This is a game you play in events. This is a game that is meant to play in that fashion and not really kind of like in a kind of group home fashion, so that, as you were saying, like, to be able to trade cards, to be able to get new cards, promo cards, cards for winning games, so that just so you can play the game. And because of the availability, you can't do that, and it's really shutting this game down. And to be honest, I don't know if WizKids is going to be able to dig themselves out of this, because while everyone does want it, it's losing the ability to kind of get fans excited about it, because the play has been a little bit lackluster because of not having all the cards or all the dice or the promos and things you should be having.
Yeah.
I mean, if WizKids does anything great, it has to be their tournaments and their special events.
Yeah, I know. And it's the fact that they can't do it. And it's even worse because they've sent out the kits, you know, sure, a couple months into that. And how many people have actually been able to do it?
Yeah, they talked about this a lot of the conventions, that I think it was Origins, that they couldn't do any of their tournaments or events because there just wasn't enough product out there. And we heard this when we went to the 20 Side store, that somebody asked about, you know, really desperately, like, please run a tournament, run an activity so I could do it. And they were like, we just don't have enough product. We can't do this, and there's not enough players for this. And you would think WizKids, Marvel, you know, collectible, $1 for the boosters, this game should be everywhere. This game should be challenging Magic. So I guess, in all, for me, the game and experience, I don't have this because I could not find this. Actually, when I saw it, I'm like, Anthony, there's a base set. We should get that. And then, you know, by the end of the night, I mean, I think they only had two, three, they were gone. They were gone that same night. And the boosters were nowhere to be found. At least you picked up some boosters earlier, which was weird because originally you could get your hands on boosters, but not the base set. And now the boosters are all gone, and maybe you can get your hands on a base set, but even still, that's pretty hard to find.
It's, yeah, I think it's easier. Like, the prices have dropped on them a little bit on eBay.
Sure, because
but they're still like $30, which is double,
yeah,
retail. The boosters come in and out. Complete Stray Editor seems to get a lot of boosters, actually. I've seen them really stock there a few times.
Yeah.
But they haven't had any for the last 2 weeks. So whatever wave they got is now used up.
Because I still haven't seen any tournaments or local events for this at all. So
no, and it's frustrating because I'm finding, like, the OP cards are on eBay. I'm like, someone's getting them.
It's really not the way that WizKids intended for this game to be played out. So it's a bit of a shame on this, because I know originally, before this came out, I was really excited about this game. And I know there was some conspiracy theories that certain people were getting stuff and not getting stuff. I mean, WizKids is a business. They want to get their stuff out there. They know the industry. They're the best at those tournaments and events. And I'm sure there's a lot of people who are sweating it right now.
Yeah, because if it was delayed for a month and that got anticipation up, and you heard all the podcasts and everybody was like, I can't find this game, that worked.
Sure.
For a month. 4 months later, you've shot yourself in the foot repeatedly, because at this point, people just don't care anymore. The fact that those starter kits were still sitting on the shelf at a 20-sided store just means people aren't looking for it anymore.
It's true.
And they did sell eventually, because somebody pointed out that they were there, and then they sold, but it's not...
Yeah, the window of support, the window of anticipation, the window of reviewing, all these windows have seemed to shut. Now, I don't know if the other sets will do better, but I think now everyone's going to have a little bit of a fear factor as far as, will this actually be something I can play?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, I'm still having a tough time with it, because I like the game a lot. I had a lot of fun with it. I enjoy the meta. I like a game where I only have to pull out 8 cards and just decide where I want to put my dice. That makes it a lot easier and quicker to build a deck and to play with different combinations without having to spend 2 hours building a deck like I used to do in Magic. And then you need 10 decks, which is ridiculous. So, and then the number of cards is smaller. So, and another really cool thing is, while the super rares seem to be pretty common in most tournament decks, people are still winning without them. And some of the best cards in the game are in the starter set. So it's not so overpowered in one direction that you have to pay for all these things. So I like a lot about this game. You know, some of the things we don't like that we've talked about, but those are pretty typical for WizKids. The problem is, if nobody else is ever going to get it, then it's not fun. Like,
and as you mentioned before, it's an investment.
Yeah.
Because you do have to spend an X amount of dollars to get to a point where you can actually field a tournament team or have enough dice to be able to play those characters, you know, in a fashion which you need to play them in. And by all means, beyond the starter set, it's possible you just don't pull enough of whatever it is you need. So you might not pull enough Wolverines, and you really need enough Wolverine dice. So then you have to go online to buy the dice, and then you have to build, you know, because as we said, since this game is so meta-driven, you're going to want to have enough to have different components kind of come in and out.
Yeah.
I was so hyped up about this game that I'm a little disappointed with the actual play, because the components it loses something for me with the components. The duplicate artwork loses something for me. I'm a huge fan of Marvel. I collected comics for years. You know, big shocker there. And I want to see different artwork. You know, if the card powers are going to be different, you got to give me at least some slightly different artwork. This was a criticism of Legendary that had all the same artwork, and now they're changing that. So I want to see different artwork there, because it's boring looking at the same cards over and over, and it's unnecessary. So, in addition, Anthony, I was talking about this before the podcast. For me, the theme for the cards doesn't really play out so well, as far as, you know, the cards aren't as thematic. So you have someone, you know, somebody who has a special ability, which is just basically +1 attack dice or +1 defense dice, or like some of those cards don't really do a lot for me, or, you know, this one defends a certain way, this one attacks a certain way. All right, you know, I don't hold that too hard against the game, because it still has to adhere to a mechanic. There are some cards that are thematic, like we talked about Nick Fury being able to recruit Avengers for free. That's very thematic. You know, the Beast one, as far as defending and he gets extra dice, I really don't see that. I mean, it could have been any other character, and it would just been just as thematic as Beast. There's nothing really about Beast that's very thematic. I mean, more of Captain America probably would have been a better fit, at least for that ability, defending with the shield and then having backup, you know. But, you know, it's a little bit of this, a little bit of that. It's a good game. It's a play for me. It's not a buy for the reasons that we talked about earlier. Maybe the dice improve. Maybe the pictures improve. Maybe the Dungeons & Dragons one is different and interesting enough that I picked that up. I'm more of an X-Men fan, personally, so I've looked at the X-Men box. It still hasn't sold me yet. I'm wondering how weird the meta and the games are going to be when you can use dice from all different kind of things. So like, yes, I'm going to roll my Superman die, and I'm going to roll my, you know, Wolverine die, and I'm going to roll my Mind Flare. And it's just like, okay. I mean, that's going to be fun, but it's just a play for me. It's not a buy, and it's kind of sad, but if I'm going to spend money on a CCG and I'm going to spend time on a meta, it's probably going to be elsewhere.
Yeah, it's tough for me. I like it a lot. I need to I don't know, they got to get their stuff figured out so they can actually play against other people, get into a tournament, see how it plays like that. One of the things that attracted me is the fact that because you're rolling dice, a tournament is a little more friendly to people who are not running with all the most expensive cards and have played 600 times. Obviously, experience is going to benefit you in any game like this, but I feel like there's probably a little bit more level of a playing field. But I don't know that because I've yet to actually do that because I just got my dice. I don't know if I'll invest any more in this set. I feel like I have a good number of cards at least to play by myself, like if I'm playing with somebody who has their own sets, unless I see something at a good value. But I might, you know, pick up the next set, check it out. I don't know. I can't see myself spending too much more money on this until WizKids gets the supply issue figured out and tournaments and OPs are actually happening regularly and other people own it. Like, if I'm the only one in my group of friends who buys this, I don't know how often we'll play it.
And you really need a tournament format in order to be able to have a community of people to trade cards with and dice.
Yeah. So it's still a buy for me. That could change over time. I don't regret buying it at all. I had a lot of fun with it. And it's not so expensive that it's going to turn into a game that sits on my shelf. I'm sure we'll play it again locally. But I don't think I'll get the full use out of it until things are figured out. And I won't know for sure if it's a buy or a play until that happens. But overall, right now, I'm enjoying it. I think it's fun. So that's our full review of Avengers vs. X-Men Marvel Dice Masters from WizKids. We'll come back to this in a couple months, hopefully, when they have their stuff figured out. If they don't ever get their stuff figured out, then that will probably be our definitive review. So that's finally getting that to the table 4 months later. Hopefully that helps you out a little bit if you have the opportunity to buy it, if you're trying to determine whether you want to pick it up. If you're in New York or the Staten Island area, Jersey, anywhere like that, and you have the game and want to play, let me know. All right, so that's everything for this episode. This is the last of our vacation specials. So next episode, in 2 weeks, we're going to talk about Gen Con, which is going to be awesome, and we'll be a little sad.
But we'll be happy for you guys who are going there, and you can send us pictures and responses and awesome games.
All of the awesome games.
Yes.
Send them all to us. So that's going to be that. But then also everybody's going to be in the building. So we're going to have nice sound quality, some nice all of us playing the same games together. It's going to be awesome.
That's if Daniel and Drew make it back. Bum, bum, bum. Well, we lost Drew and then we lost Daniel. So I'm hoping they get back.
It's true. They've gone a long time.
It's pretty much a really scary house that we're in, so you never know. It could be haunted.
My house?
All right. Look, I'm going with a theme here. They dropped off the call, so it makes sense.
All right, but that's everything for this episode. We hope you enjoyed it, and next time we're going to have a lot more fun. We're going to have a lot of games coming out to the table. Make sure to follow us on Facebook, Board Gamers Anonymous, Twitter, @BGApodcast, Board Game Geek. We're actually starting to grow the guild. Get in there and comment questions. I want to hear your questions. We did not have any for this episode. That's sad. I need questions. And then, of course, we have our website, BoardGamersAnonymous.com, with our curator, Drew, doing amazing work on there every day. So check it out. Check out Facebook. Check out Twitter. Interact. Share your gaming stories. We will share them with the world.
And don't forget, we're on iTunes, so be sure to check us out there and rate us. The higher we go, the more our voices get out to everybody. And also on Stitcher, so if you're a fan of Stitcher, you can check us out there as well. And don't forget, Kick in the Habit, our weekly podcast on everything Kickstarter.
Yeah, absolutely. We are out there all over the place. So you have no excuse.
And clearly, we went to South Carolina, Maine, just to meet you.
You're spreading the word, man.
I'm disappointed that no one's recognized me, right?
Right?
You're on the street, and you're just with the sunglasses, and you got your hoodie on. You just don't want to be recognized. You want to be dragged down by fans.
Yeah, you got to be careful.
Yeah, that's good. We've been to a couple stores, like in Jersey, and we just tell them what podcast you're on. I'm like, oh, yeah, I think I've heard of you. And we're like, no, you haven't. Like 9 months ago, I'm like, we have like 80 listeners. But we could actually possibly run into people now, because we're getting a nice crew out there.
Yeah, a lot of people, when I go out to Jersey now, they've said, yeah, listen to the podcast. That's great. So,
all right. So, Jersey crew, way to listen.
Yeah.
Better than Drew.
Big shout out to New Jersey Board Gamers. We're going there for our weekly meetup on Sunday, so I hope to see you all there.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so that's everything for this week. This is Anthony.
This is Chris.
This is Daniel.
And this is the disembodied voice of Drew. And until next time, we'll save you a seat at the table.
All right, guys, let's wrap this up. Let's get people on planes and home so we can play some real games in your friggin' vacations.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.